Welcome to the British Continental Podcast, the show shining a light on stories about British bike racing teams and riders at the domestic level.
Hello and welcome to the British Continental Podcast. I'm Denny Gray, and today's episode features an interview with Welshman Peter Kibble. The 22-year-old took the tough decision to retire from racing earlier this year. Deciding not to pursue your pro cycling dream must be a difficult moment for any talented young rider. So I was really grateful when Peter agreed to speak about his career and why he decided to hang up his metaphorical wheels. Peter showed promise as a cyclist from a young age. In his first year as a junior, he took an impressive sixth overall in the Junior Tour of Wales, a race regarded as Britain's premier junior stage race. He followed that up with a stage win and fourth on GC in the same race the next year. He started his under 23 career at the Zappi Racing Team before moving to the Wales Racing Academy, where he stayed for the rest of his career. Despite injury troubles, Peter continued to show his promise. Last season, he finished second in the early season Betty Farrow road race to Connor Swift and came close to bagging top tens in National Road Series races. He also produced an aggressive ride at the notoriously tough Tour de Britannia stage race, coming close to securing the Polkadot jersey. We interviewed Peter for the website at the beginning of the year, ahead of his final season as an under 23. It's a time in a rider's career when the pressure can mount, with riders often seeing it as their last opportunity to snag a pro contract. Indeed, Peter described 2020 as a make or break season for him. He made the best possible start, taking two wins from two races, the Evesham Vale Road Race and the Betty Farrow. And then lockdown arrived. At the end of May, Peter announced his decision to retire, declaring he no longer had the inner drive required to chase his dream of turning pro. It was a brave decision for a rider who had been showing such great form, and so I was keen to find out more. Welcome, Peter, to the British Continental Podcast. Where are you this evening?
I'm currently in Vale of Glamorgan in South Wales, recording this from my mum's art studio, actually.
Yeah, it looks very very creative behind you. Yeah. And a nice lot of light still coming through, even though it's quite late on this evening.
Yeah, there's a sea out there. Very blustery this evening, though.
And you're kind of joining us, having recently announced your retirement from cycling, which we'll come on to in a bit, but just tell people how you got into cycling.
So I first got into cycling mainly through my dad, who was a professional triathlete back in the 80s and 90s, and sort of sports always gone through my family, be it like my dad came back as a vet and he was always racing, so then bikes were always around me with his triathlon roots, and it's just sort of a course that I ended up getting onto a bike, and then slowly got into racing, be it mountain biking first, and then got into the road slowly, started racing when I was around 9, and then progressed like slowly year by year till sort of under 16s to juniors is when I got on Welsh programs, and then it progressed from there, and then all the way to where we are today, out of under 23s, and where I've decided to step in a different direction.
Those listeners that don't know you as a cyclist, how would you describe yourself, or how would you describe your former self as a rider?
I describe myself, I've mostly been known as a climber, be it through my year racing at Zappies and things like that. I've always sort of pigeonholed myself as a climber, but otherwise I like to just be really aggressive in races and getting breakaways and just get stuck in. Haven't got much of a kick, so I've never really been one for the sprint finishes. So I've always just tried to get up the road, which is my main sort of thing I'm known for.
Yeah, and this year, of course, you started your third year with the Wales Racing Academy and your final year as an under 23. Just tell me a bit about the Wales Racing Academy setup. It seemed to be something that when we did the interview earlier this year, you kind of really valued, and you thought kind of gave you something that perhaps other setups didn't.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I've really enjoyed my time in the Wales Racing Academy. So I joined the team in sort of, well, late end of 2017, going into 2018, Commonwealth Games year. That's what the first year of the team, and it sort of progressed year on year. And yeah, we got a really good support network be it through Sport Wales funding as well. So it's more of a package than a lot of the teams. So you get support elsewhere as opposed to just racing and stuff. So it feels like a lot more of a tight-knit family when you go into races and stuff. And I really like being a part of the team. All the boys, we all get along really well. Especially going into this year, we really seem to have sort of gelled going to racing this year. Just a shame about sort of the circumstances that have stopped us from hopefully having the year that we would have liked.
And what kind of race program were you doing with the academy?
So it's a mix of UK racing and European top under 23 races, and even the biggest race we did last year was Tour of Bretagne, which we were pretty much surprised that we got a invite ourselves to, and that was one of our biggest opportunities we've raced at. We've done other things like the RAS in Ireland, other big sort of stage races, and this year the team was really looking to do more European stuff, just to give everyone sort of really good experiences of racing. And as an under 23, I think the European racing really is where it's at if you want to get noticed to go forward with those sort of contracts, compared to the race in the UK, which is slightly limited at points.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, in the Tour de Bretagne last year, you wore the polka dot jersey for a stage or two, didn't you? You came very close to winning that.
Yeah, so I got it on stage one, spent the day in the break, and then the next day I managed to spend the whole day in the break again. So I accumulated a load of points, and then because I had sort of got a fair few time bonuses then, I was fairly high up on GC, so then it was sort of a balancing act of GC or the polka dot jersey, and then it sort of became quite hard to maintain both throughout the race, as you're sort of a marked man being in the top 10 on GC and trying to get points for the polka dot. So I maintained it for, I think it was 4 or 5 days of the race, and then lost it 2 days to go. But yeah, that's probably one of my biggest achievements last year.
Talking about achievements, I was looking back at your Paul Mares. I guess you started off well as a junior, getting good results in the Junior Tour of Wales in particular.
Yeah.
I think you came sixth in your first year as a junior, and then won a stage in the second year.
The first year was pretty gutting for me, as I had a massive crash, and sort of after stage two, I ended up having a huge crash. I was in the breakaway, and for some reason, I can't really remember what it was, but it was a big crash. I ended up with 25 stitches in my face and lost 2 teeth. But I continued at stage one, got 8th still, and then sort of slugged through the next few stages to get 6th on GC. And then the year after, had another good race again and sort of won up the Regos, which is like, I was really happy with, because it's like my training climb from my house. It's the one that I do all my efforts on.
25 stitches and 2 teeth.
Yeah. That's,
and you carried on racing. That must have been
It was a long night in A&E. And the next morning, because my lip was so swollen, the only thing I could get down me was Cocoa Pops at the Premier Inn. So,
well,
so not the ideal feel.
Yeah. I mean, cyclists have a reputation for carrying on when they're injured, but that seems quite an extreme decision to continue. What was going through your mind at that point? Can you remember?
I think as a junior, I just sort of put so much on myself that I really wanted to do well at the Tour of Wales. It's like, especially in Wales, we see it as such a big race, and I probably didn't have that much external pressure, but I put a lot on myself, because I feel like I'm the rider in Wales to produce the result at that race. And I just wanted to keep going, because I think I was just so frustrated about the crash. I was just driven on by that. But yeah, afterwards I did feel the pain after the stage.
But still, sixth on GC with that is pretty impressive. Yeah. And you know, for those that don't know, the Junior Tour of Wales really is the premier stage race for juniors in the UK. I mean, there have been some pretty big winners of that race in the past. And then once you left the junior ranks, you joined Zappi Racing Team.
Zappies, yep.
You had a year there, and I think you said in the interview it wasn't something that really worked out for you.
No, I didn't quite gel with the setup. So I think I've come from, how can I put it, with a Welsh cycling setup, everything is run very sort of professionally and it is what it is, whereas when you go to Zappies, it's a very different environment. It's very like, I don't want to sound too sort of derogatory to like Flavio and that, because his setup does work for certain people, but it just didn't work for me. And I just didn't gel with it. So I decided a year was enough for me. And then with the Wales Racing Academy setting up, that looked like a really good opportunity for me. So, but I do value my experience that I had there a lot. Like, it's such a great experience to be able to live in Italy and sort of do all those things that you end up doing out there for a year.
And you rode the fearsome Giro Valle d'Aosta, which is a pretty tough race for your first year as an under 23.
Yeah, I was really happy to actually make it round that race as a first year. It was a race I'd really have liked to do again as an under 23, but sort of the opportunity never came about to do. But yeah, it's absolutely brutal. Like, I just remember one of the climbs, I think it was stage two, it was dubbed as like a, they kind of called it an Ardennes style stage. And I'm just thinking, have the organisers ever been to the Ardennes? Like, the climbs aren't 8 kilometres at 10%. Yeah, it's absolutely savage, but it was a great race as well.
But you finished, no DNFs next to your name in that race?
No, not in that one, no. And then I think a week later we did Bassano Monte Grappa, and that was an awesome race to do as well. It's such a sort of historical climb, Monte Grappa. It's like a flat race and then finishes on a, what is it, 26 or 30 kilometre climb. So it just goes flat into a 30k climb.
Wow. Well, I mean, obviously you didn't gel at the setup at Zappies, but I guess for a rider like you, the kind of races you were doing were potentially suited to your style, weren't they?
Yeah, definitely. I just didn't feel like sort of the style of the training and stuff, I wasn't going that well like that year compared to what I have since then. And I knew that I could do physically. But that was frustrating for me. Like, I had these races that I could have excelled in, but be it a bit of inexperience and that I wasn't going as well as I possibly could in those races meant I found it fairly frustrating that I couldn't perform as I thought I should be in them. But I think that is a big part of stepping up from juniors to under 23s, is you should sort of underestimate the level change. Like, when I look back at that year that I was racing in Italy, then you look at those pros from that year, say the Val d'Aosta, you've got Pavel Sivakov, Padoon, all sorts of riders like that are top World Tour riders now, won World Tour bike races since, and you're like, yeah, okay, it's not such a bad thing to just about get around the race.
Yeah, I watched Alex Dowsett's video today, in which he gives a really good seeming set of advice to under 23 riders about, you know, what to look for in a team and how to go about kind of looking to become pro. And I guess one of the things he said there was that, you know, when you, that jump up from junior to under 23 is quite big, and you shouldn't, you know, it's easy to kind of set yourself big ambitions and be disappointed if you don't meet them. But actually it's a step that for many is just, I guess, just like, you know, the jump up to World Tour eventually, you know, is one about learning and just adjusting.
Yeah. I think people sort of need to bear that in mind a lot, because I feel as a lot of top juniors, you just think that is the be all and end all when you're at that level, and you just think, ah, oh, I'll be like great when I go into that next level. But it is really is a big sort of step up. But it seems now that everyone's getting better and better, younger and younger. Like, when you look at people being signed so young at the moment as well, it feels like people are probably making that transition a bit quicker nowadays.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be a trend, and it'd be interesting to see how that how that pans out, you know, the riders missing out the under 23 kind of training ground, as it were.
How
long their careers last, and whether it's the right move to jump up so soon.
Yeah, it might mean sort of the longevity of the careers are sort of shortened quite a lot by that, because people will always be wanting the sort of next youngest riders.
Moving on to more positive stuff, though. I mean, you then moved on to the Wales Racing Academy, which you said earlier was a setup which you felt really at home with. And I guess the way you describe it, it seems like it's a little bit like the British Cycling Academy, in the sense that you get a lot more than just
definitely.
You know, a bike and a kind of a race program.
Yeah, I describe it as sort of a mini GB with a little bit less budget and a bit friendlier. That's how I'd probably describe our team.
I know the two teams ride with each other sometimes, don't they? But is there a kind of a bit of rivalry there?
A little bit, but I think feel like we all get along. I think it's the same with a lot of us riders. Sort of your rivals on the road, but off the bike, a lot of us get along, and we've trained together a fair bit, the two teams, even going back to this February, when we were training in Girona, we were training with GB and stuff. It's just kind of nice to train with like other guys from different teams, and sort of all pushes each other on then.
In terms of your more recent career, last season you described as a year of ups and downs. I mean, look, I guess you first came to my notice in races like the Klondike Grand Prix and obviously the Tour de Bretagne, which we talked about, where you didn't get the top results, but for a young rider, you were certainly competing up there with the best of them. It was a good start to the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, it went well, and sort of momentum carried pretty well till mid-season. And then about 2 weeks after Bretagne, I got a bit of a virus, but I thought I was all right to race. And then I decided to do Redditch Tour Series. Again, I shouldn't probably have been racing because I was pretty ill, but I just decided I was going to do it. I was going quite well in the race till about 5 minutes to go, so I was still in the sort of bunch. Then 5 minutes to go, I started getting sort of this weird feeling in like my heart I've never sort of experienced before. I was like, whoa, this is weird. I don't like this. So I had to sort of pull out the race, and then it sort of died down straight away. So then I had to go for a load of tests and stuff to see if it was quite a serious issue. So I'd gone to the doctors and stuff the next day. I was monitored for quite a while. And it turned out to be nothing in the end, but it was because I had raced on a virus and it gave me sort of heart palpitations because I had maxed my body so hard while my body's trying to fight a virus. So it was kind of scary. It was a bit... I find it quite scary as well because my dad suffered from AF. Atrial fibrillation in the past, so it did make me quite cautious about that. So it did put me out for a while because I was monitored for, I want to say, 5 weeks with that sort of issue, so it put me out of the season for a while. And then when I came back to racing, the first race I did in Belgium, I had a massive crash onto my face and my knee, and then I had a lingering knee injury for the next month and a half. So I think the biggest thing is sort of numbers wise I was still there for like the latter end of the year, but it really did knock my confidence and sort of self-esteem. And as a rider, they're sort of some of the biggest areas that I've suffered with as a rider. I haven't always had the best self-belief and not always the most confident rider in that way. So I think that is really where I sort of let myself down for the latter end of that year, and why the results didn't come off for me.
What kind of impact does that outlook have on you as a rider? How does that affect you in races and in training?
I think big time, because when you have that sort of doubt, and I would say I'm quite a big overthinker of things. So in a race, a lot of the time you have to just act on instinct and just like believe. It's just all about self-belief. It's like you see a move going and you can't go, what if, or oh no. You've just got to go, yeah, I can go with that. And if it didn't work, you'd be like, oh, I'll be able to go again. Instead of just thinking about it, you just got to just go. And I feel like I lack that quite a lot. And if I look back through opportunities that have sort of passed me, I've missed a few of these vital ones in the past. And that sort of, it does frustrate me. But I also think sort of one of the reasons why I didn't feel like I could quite make it as a professional, because I think my mind works too much for it. And it's not something I can coach either. It's just me as a person.
And is that, I can completely see that. I mean, I guess, when you listen to a lot of riders after analysing races, I guess many have regrets. And cycling is, famous for adages about, only having a certain amount of matches to burn. And, and sometimes races are just decided by luck, aren't they, about getting the right break at the right time. And I guess you never quite know at the time which is the right one and which isn't. Was the issue kind of more about just almost being paralyzed about, being able to make a decision about whether to go for a break or?
Yeah, because I think there's a certain element of luck to it, but also, it's not a coincidence that certain top riders always make that sort of move. You just gotta, if you're strong enough, you just keep going with the attacks and stuff and you will be there. And it's just like believing in your ability. Like, you do all that training, you know your figures, you know you should be there. It's just a matter of acting on it. And I sort of feel like I've hesitated on quite a few of those opportunities.
And you obviously mentioned the fact that the having this potential heart issue, which wasn't a heart issue, and the crash, I mean, they impacted on your belief and your self-esteem. In what way did they do that? I mean, I guess it was beyond just that ability to wonder whether you went for a particular move or not.
So I sort of feel like I was like, oh, I've lost so much ground on everyone in that season. You know, you see what everyone else is doing and then you go to a race thinking, oh, I don't think I'll do well here or whatever. And then that's just like a vicious circle. Once you start thinking that people are better than you and to believe in that, and you sort of, especially when you've got 4 hours to think in a race, you just overthink all these sort of scenarios too much. And when you're racing, then it ends up quite sort of detrimental to your performance then in the race. And that did affect me quite a lot at the end of that year. It took me a while to sort of put my finger on why I wasn't performing, but when I really do think into it,
So you're saying your numbers were the same, in training, so you could see that you were as fit as you were in the beginning 100%. Of season when you were doing well.
All sort of testing, all sorts of training rides that I used to sort of measure my form and stuff was all pretty much the same. The mind is such a sort of powerful thing in sport. I feel like it should be trained by people just as much as your body. I think it is the thing that stands out, the good from the great.
And it's something you worked on at the Wales Racing Academy. You said you're doing some sessions with the psychologist there.
Yeah, done some of that. And also just Rob's just helped me a lot because just chatting with Rob about everything. He's been there and done all the racing that we have. He's had countless sort of racing experiences, so he's got a lot of knowledge to pass on to you. He's just really easy to talk to about those sort of things. You don't really see him as a sort of scary coach figure, you see him as a mate to talk to about these things. So Rob has helped a lot with those sort of areas, and I do think I come into this with a lot better mindset, a lot more sort of self-belief, and I think that's why I did get those early season results, because I just saw it as I have to win these races, and I ended up doing that.
Yeah, right. For those that don't know, Rob Partridge is the man you're talking about. He runs the Wales Racing Academy, and of course was a very strong rider in his own right when he rode. And you said he plays an important role. I guess that's the same for a lot of riders, really. I guess the guy who's running the team or kind of directing things can have a big impact on you, particularly, as you say, if your mind is as important as the kind of your physical condition in a race.
Yeah, definitely. Sort of Rob's experience just in all ways, really. be it just little sort of nuggets of information going into a race or just his outlook on a race is just really helpful for us. I think sometimes we probably even take that for granted, some of us in the team. But like when you look into it, when Rob says something, he's not just saying it for the sake of it. He does know what he's talking about.
And you've got onto it already, but when we interviewed you at the beginning of the year, you talked about the fact that this was essentially a make or break season for you. I think maybe I put those words in your mouth, but it certainly
that is how I looked at it as well.
Certainly, that's seems to be quite a common position for riders like you going into their final year as an under 23. It's often seen as, I guess, the last chance saloon to get a pro contract. Although, there are obvious exceptions, but I guess you felt at that point when we spoke that the pressure was on, but you started the season really well. You got first in, you had two races and you won them both, pretty tough races, Evesham Vale and Betty Farrow. How did that go? You said you had to win them. Was there a normal?
Yeah. So it's sort of, that's internal pressure of just me just wanting to do that. Just because I felt I was capable of it. But in those races, again, we just rode, especially Evesham, we got a 1-2-3 as a team. And everyone just rode so well. We just gelled so good as a unit this year. Again, in the Betty Farrow. And it was a sort of combination of just everyone just believing in a common goal. And everyone was sort of riding selflessly to help each other. And obviously that ends up in us all doing pretty well in the race, which it was a great feeling to be a part of a team like that. I know it's only a nap being not a sort of a big national race, but it still felt good to pull off a result like that.
Mm. Yeah. And I guess if we were to write a review of the season, you would be one of the riders of the season. Given how,
I'm not sure how much two races holds on that, but yeah.
But it started well. I guess in your quest to find a pro contract, that was a great start to the season. And I guess, on paper at least, it started you off well. How did you feel when lockdown hit and racing ended?
I was pretty gutted then because I did think, with me again, as I was talking about my self-confidence, that it's just once you get the ball rolling, it would be that sort of snowballs onto each race then, and once you start a good thing, it will carry on for a while. And that's sort of what me and Rob had set out to do this year, come into the year going really well and just try and mop up as many results as quick as possible, so you've just got them in the bank and you can sort of breathe a sigh of relief and then race knowing that you've got those in the bank for the rest of the year, and hopefully that you would sort of have the legs to carry that. That was the plan anyway. But obviously with lockdown hitting, it was pretty gutting. It was just going through the motions of training for a while, trained pretty hard for quite a while, and then it just looked, everything was going further and further away, and you're just oh, it's sort of slipping away from me now. And so if you go back to last year when I had all that time off with injury and heart issues and stuff, I had thought about what I would do if I didn't race back then, and I did have big doubts about sort of continuing cycling then, but I was like, I need to give it more of a shot, otherwise I'll just regret it if I end now. So I was like, right, last year under 23 is my time to give it everything. So I went into this year giving it everything, and then I've got to this stage now, it's just I don't feel like there will be a bit of a pessimistic point of view, but not much of a season left, and I felt it is time for me now to go to sort of pastures new.
Hmm. So that was something that cropped up last year as well. It wasn't, something that's kind of new in your head.
No.
Something you've been mulling over for a while.
Yeah. So I've always liked to be sort of a realist and not stay in that sort of cycling bubble, like, constantly. Like, I like to look outside. I've got lots of friends outside of cycling as well. I'm always looking at other things that I could do as well. I think it's just healthy to have other interests outside of cycling as well. And I think I just got to the stage where it's just like, there's a lot of other things that I could do with myself, and it would get to the stage next year of, if I couldn't get sort of a ride, I don't think I'd be that happy in what I was doing, just sort of chasing the same thing that seemed further and further away. So I was like, I feel like it is time for me to just go and explore new things, do some stuff while I can before getting a serious job.
I mean, you described it in your blog as kind of the feeling of kind of lacking inner drive.
Yeah.
I mean, was it, how much of it was kind of a feeling that you'd, I don't know, perhaps lost the love for cycling, or versus kind of thinking you just weren't going to make it in, you know, in inverted commas?
So, my views on it was, as a cyclist, I always just wanted to become a top level cyclist. So it is my career and I'm earning off it. I don't want to be sort of racing for nothing, or in that bracket where you're always sort of from year to year, you're just scratching around to just get by racing. I wouldn't want to be like that. It's either all or nothing. Like, I either just want to do it for fun or do it incredibly seriously. And I got to the stage where I was just like, go past this year. I feel like that opportunity to do it at the highest level would have passed me. And I'd like to go sort of explore some new things and do some different stuff.
Even with your good start to the season, I mean, I guess you know, I'd imagine on paper, you know, a continental team in the UK may have thought that your, you know, start to the season and your previous results might be worthy of a spot. But I guess what you're saying is that you kind of wanted to kind of really be a proper full-on pro rather than kind of be at that intermediate level where you may not be getting a wage or...
Yeah, pretty much. And as I said, when I come back to sort of the drive thing, it was just getting more and more of a chore to do my daily stuff. And I've always actually really enjoyed training, which is kind of a bit strange for some people. But I did like the process of training quite a lot. And it was starting to get more and more of a chore. I was just pushing it more and more, like, later and later starts, and I was just like, why, what am I doing this for? Like, why am I actually doing it? And I didn't want to get to the stage where I didn't enjoy cycling, because I still currently love riding my bike. I still pretty much ride my bike almost every day. I love sport, and I didn't want to get to that stage, because I know a lot of people that I've raced with, be it friends like Oscar Minge, who's a really good junior, his circumstances are a bit different. With his like eating disorder and stuff, but he got to the stage where he just absolutely hated cycling and doesn't want to like ride, and I never wanted to get to that stage because I've always loved cycling. I've met so many great people through the sport, and I see myself having different sort of careers within the sport, and I wouldn't mind pursuing sort of having a job in cycling in the coming years now.
And how was it telling the team, telling your friends, telling your loved ones that you decided to stop?
So I'd mulled it over in my head for a long time. I'd had some conversations with like people really close to me, some people that were in cycling, some people out of cycling, and everyone just was really supportive, and they were just like, look, you'll just feel so much happier once you get it off your chest and out there. And I was just really nervous about making the decision, but everyone, including Welsh Cycling, have been so supportive and so understanding of like my decision, and it hasn't been hard at all. If anything, I feel a lot happier from making it. It's sort of like a weight shifted off your shoulders, because I felt like I owed a lot to people, but actually when you just sit back and look at it is just sport. Like, it might seem like the world when you're in it, but there's also so many other things outside of it that you can do, and it is just sport and riding a bike at the end of the day.
So a very philosophical attitude.
Yeah.
When you say you feel like you owe people, what do you mean by that?
So by leaving the team and that, like, I felt like I owed something to them because I've been a part of it for so long, and I kind of always wanted to show that I could be a success off their back, and I didn't quite get to what I wanted to achieve in sort of my original cycling goals. But as Rob said, he didn't see it like that at all, and he said I'd been like sort of a good member of the team, and he was just like, don't feel like you've let anyone down at all. It's your decision, and if you're not 100% in it, you know how hard the sport is, and sort of it's like your decision to make, and I respect it.
Yeah, that must have been you know, I guess that backs up what you said about Rob, really, you know, kind of being very supportive of the riders, whether they're choosing to ride or not, and backing their decisions.
Yeah, definitely.
So you feel relief now. You've taken that decision. You've announced it, and you mentioned off tape, as it were, that you know, that there are others that perhaps mulling over this decision. I'm not going to ask you to name names, but I guess what I'm saying is this is a decision that I guess other riders will be thinking about right now, particularly with lockdown, the season pretty much over in the UK by the looks of it, even though there might be some opportunities in Europe. It must be a difficult time for lots of cyclists right now.
Yeah, I feel like it's sort of a hard time, but there's little sort of areas of motivation, be it online racing and things like that. And you've got to look at it like a lot of people are in the same boat. And if it is the thing that you really want to do and you really believe in it, who says you can't do it the next year? If you believe that way, you can just like crack on to the next year. But if you have got those doubts and things, just have some proper conversations with people around you and surround yourself with the right people to sort of have those conversations with, and really look at what other options you'd have and what you would do, and don't feel like you're letting people down or anything like that, because you've got to do what's best for you at the end of the day. And if you aren't 100% committed into cycling, it's such a hard sport that you can't just do it half-hearted at all.
I mean, looking back on your career, I mean, what would you say are your proudest achievements? What were you kind of take away from your career in cycling?
Bretton, I know I didn't actually hold the jersey in the end, but I was really happy just how I rode that whole week, because I just didn't go in with expectations and I just rode as aggressive as I could, and I was really happy with what I came out of the race with. Other races, like, not, I'd say the RAS in 2018, that was like a highlight for me. I was really happy of how I rode there. I think I had about 12 on GC in the end. But yeah, we rode that like really well as a team. Again, one of the middle stages. We had a good plan and we sort of executed it, which is always just a great feeling. But probably my biggest highlight is definitely got to be doing the Commonwealth Games for Wales. It's probably the best experience of cycling that I've ever had. Doing Gold Coast 2018 was just phenomenal. Like, especially with Mouldy getting his silver medal, it felt like a win for us. It was amazing.
Yeah, must have been incredible. And what's next for you, Peter?
So I'm sort of keeping all avenues open, but... Well, it sounds a bit daft at the moment, but I'm looking at getting into sort of the cycling travel industry and doing a bit of guiding for companies, and hopefully doing that in Europe once we're allowed out into that. So that's what I'm looking at doing. But in the meanwhile, I'm ticking over with doing some coaching and mentoring for people. And yeah, just a bit of work in the meantime, a bit of random bits here and there.
And you're still riding?
Yeah, still riding. I've been running a fair bit, actually. So a few people have been saying, you're trying to follow your dad's footsteps. You get into triathlon soon.
And I mean, is it... Would you think you'd ever be tempted just to kind of, you know, join a local race and still kind of get that?
Yeah. No, definitely.
Hit.
our local race is round the corner from me, Landau races. We call it the Landau World Champs. It's great in the summer on a Tuesday night, just a 45-minute crit. And yeah, I'll definitely be turning up to a few of those next year when I'm about.
Brilliant. So you're retired, but you will still see you in some races.
Yeah, I'll still definitely heavily be involved in cycling.
Brilliant. Well, I think that's a great place to leave it. Thanks so much for joining us, Peter, and also thanks for so much for being such an open and honest interviewee. It's been really, really fascinating to hear your story.
No worries at all.
Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do leave us a nice review. You can subscribe on all the usual channels, and you can follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at British Conti, and on Instagram, we are at the British Continental. And please do visit our website for more interviews, journals, previews, and news at thebritishcontinental.co.uk.